The incident happened in the spring after his 6th birthday. His mother always referred to it as that dreadful evening, and always is not exaggeration. She talked about it a lot, especially when he did well at anything, which was often as he was good at school and at passing exams. "When I think we might have lost Richard that dreadful evening. You have to believe there's someone watching over us, don't you?" Apparently it bore talking about. If I'd told him once, I'd told him 50 times never to talk to strangers or get into cars. But boys will be boys, and he forgot all that when the time came. He was given sweets, of course, and lured into this car. Whispers at this point, meaning glances in his direction. What Richard couldn't understand was how his mother knew so much about it. She hadn't been there. Only he and the man had been there. And he couldn't remember a thing about it. A curtain had fallen over that bit of his memory. They were living then in Upfield, in a little terraced house in Petunia Street, he and his mother and his father. Round the corner in Lupin Street lived his gran, his father's mother. Gran never came to their house, though he thought his father would have liked it if she had. That made 3 houses Richard was allowed into. His own, his gran's, and the house next door in Petunia Street, where the Wilsons lived with their Brenda and their John. He and John were in the same class at school, but his mother wouldn't let him go to school alone with John, although it was only 3 streets away. She was very careful and nervous about him, was his mother, waiting outside the gates before school ended to walk him home, with his hand tightly clasped in hers. But once a week he didn't go straight home, because Wednesday evening was the one he spent at Gran's, and the time between his mother's leaving him and his arrival at Gran's house was the only time he was ever free and by himself. That was the way it was. That dreadful evening, his mother left him as usual at the corner and saw him across the road. He could remember that. And remember, too, how he'd looked to see if Gran was at her gate. When he'd made sure she wasn't, he'd wandered onto the building site to cajole the cat out of the nest she'd made for herself among the rubble. It was late March, a fine afternoon and still broad daylight at 4. He was stroking the cat, thinking how thin and bony she was and how some of Gran's fish and chips would do her good when... What next? At this point, the curtain came down. 3 hours later, it lifted, and he was in Plumtree Grove, walking along quite calmly, when whom should he meet but Mrs. Wilson's Brenda, out for an evening with her boyfriend. Brenda had pointed at him, stared, and shouted. She ran up to him and clutched him and squeezed him till he could hardly breathe. Was that what had frightened him into losing his memory? Petunia Street was full of police cars, and there was a crowd outside their house. Brenda hustled him in, shouting, "I found him! I found him!" And there was his father, all white in the face, talking to policemen, his mother half dead on the sofa being given brandy, and wonder of wonders, his gran there too. They all started asking him questions at once. Had he answered them? All that remained in his memory was his mother's scream. He was never allowed to be alone after that, not even to play with John in the Wilsons' garden. And he was never allowed to forget those events he couldn't remember. Growing up brought no elucidation of that dreadful evening, but it did bring, with adolescence, the knowledge of what might have happened. And as he came to understand that it wasn't only threats and blows and stories of horror which the man might have inflicted on him, he felt an alien in his own body, or as if that body were covered with a slime which nothing could wash away. For there was no way of knowing now, nothing to do about it but wish his mother would leave the subject alone, avoid getting friendly with people, and work hard at school. He did very well there, for he was naturally intelligent and had no outside diversions. He was the first member of his family ever to go to college, and the only cloud in the sky was that his gran wasn't there to see his glory. She had died in the hospital when he was 14, and the little bit of money she'd saved, she left to Richard to come to him when he was 18. It was just enough to buy a car, and when he came down from university for the Easter holidays, he bought a 2-year-old Ford. His mother watched him drive expertly round the block, her only regret that he hadn't got a nice girl beside him. The day after he'd passed his test, he thought he'd drive over to Upfield and look up John Wilson. It was a Wednesday in early April, a fine, mild afternoon, and still, of course, broad daylight at 4. But as he approached Petunia Street up Plumtree Grove from the southerly direction, it struck him that he'd quite like to take a look at his gran's old house and see whether they'd built anything on that bit of waste ground. For years and years those bricks had lain there, though the thin old cat had disappeared or died. And the bricks were still there, overgrown now by grass and nettles. As he was trying to pull himself out of this dreamy, dazed feeling and go off to John's, a living creature did appear behind the shrub-high weeds. A boy, about 8. Richard didn't intend to get out of the car, but he found himself out of it, locking the door, and then strolling over onto the building site. He didn't mean to speak to the boy, for he wasn't a child anymore, but a man. And if there is an explicit rule that a child mustn't speak to strangers, there is an explicit, unstated one, that a man doesn't speak to children. "You're trespassing on private land. Did you know that?" The boy began to ease himself down. "All the kids play here, mister." "Maybe, but that's no excuse. Where do you live?"
"Upfield High Road."
"I think you'd better get in my car, and I'll take you home."
"There won't be no one there. My mum works late Wednesdays, and I haven't got no dad.
I'm to go straight home from school and have my tea for when my mum comes at 7. "But you haven't, have you? You hung about trespassing on other people's property."
"You a cop, mister?"
"Yes. Yes, I am." The boy got into the car quite willingly.
"Are we going to the cop shop?"
"We may go to the police station later. I want to have a talk to you first. We'll go..." What made him choose Drywood Common? So far away, a place he'd heard of but hadn't visited so far as he knew in his life. "We'll go to Drywood and have a talk. There's some chocolate on the dashboard shelf. Have a bit if you like." The boy introduced himself as Barry. He was 8, and he had no brothers and sisters or father, just his mum, who worked to keep them both. It wasn't easy finding Drywood Common because the signposting was bad around there. But the strange thing was that, once there, the whole layout of the common was familiar. "We'll park down by the lake." Barry was very calm and trusting. He listened intelligently to the policeman's lecture on behaving himself and not trespassing, and he didn't fidget or seem bored when the man stopped talking about that and began to talk about himself. The man had had a lonely sort of life, a bit like being in prison, and he'd never been allowed out alone. Even when he was in his own room doing his homework, he'd been watched, and he hadn't had a single real friend. Would Barry be his friend? Just for a few hours? Just for that evening? Barry would. "But you're grown up now," he said. The man nodded. Barry said later, when he recalled the details of what his mother called that nasty experience, for he was always able to remember every detail, that it was at this point the man had begun to cry. A small, rather dirty hand touched the man's hand and held it. No one had ever held his hand like that before. Not possessively or commandingly, but gently, sympathetically, lovingly. Their hands remained clasped, the small one covering the large, then the large enclosing and gripping the small. Attention, as if time stopped, held the two people in the car still. The boy broke it and time moved again.
"What's the time?" 6:15. I ought to be getting back now. How about a game of hide-and-seek first? Your mum won't be home yet. I can get you back to Upfield in 10 minutes. I don't know. Suppose she gets in early? Please. Just for a little while. I used to play hide-and-seek down here when I was a kid. But you said you never played anywhere. You said...
Did I?
Maybe I didn't. I'm a bit confused. Barry looked at him gravely. I'll hide first. In the car, the man sat counting. 98, 99, 100. When he stopped, he was aware of the silence of the place. The boy wasn't behind any of the trees, or in the bushes by the waterside, or covered by the brambles in the ditch that ran parallel to the road. Where the hell had the stupid kid got to?
Where are you, Barry? Come on out. I've had about enough of this.
There was no answer. When I find him, I'll kill him. He broke a stick off a bush and began thrashing about with it, enraged, shouting into the dark silence.
Barry, come out at once! Do you hear me? He doesn't want me. He doesn't care about me. No one will ever want me.
Then he heard a giggle from a treetop above him, and suddenly there was a cracking of twigs, a slithering sound. In the giggle, he thought there was a note of jeering. But where? Where? For a moment the man stood still. His hands clenched as on a frail neck, and he held them pressed together, crushing out life. He thrust his way through the bushes, making for the pond. The boy would be away by now, but not far away, and his legs were long enough and strong enough to outrun him. But he was nowhere, and yet... What was that sound? He wheeled round, and there was the boy coming towards him. A thick constriction gripped his throat. There must have been something in his face, some threatening gravity made more intense by the half-dark that stopped the boy in his tracks. They stared at each other for a moment. For a lifetime. For 12 long years. Then the boy gave a merry laugh, fearless and innocent. He ran forward, then flung himself into the man's arms, and the man, in a great release of pain and anguish, lifted the boy up, lifted him, laughing into his own laughing face. Come on, Richard said. I'll take you home. I don't know what I was doing, bringing you here in the first place.
To play hide and seek, said Barry. We had a nice time.
They got back into the car. It was after 7 when they got to Upfield High Road.
I don't reckon my mum's got in yet.
I'll drop you here. I won't go up to your place. Richard opened the car door to let him out.
Barry? What is it, mister?
Don't ever take a lift from a man again, will you? Promise me? Barry nodded.
Okay.
I once took a lift from a stranger, and for years I couldn't remember what had happened. It sort of came back to me tonight, meeting you. I remember it all now. He was all right, just a bit lonely, like me. But it wouldn't always be like that.
How'd you know?
Richard looked at his strong young man's hands. I just know. Goodbye, Barry, and... Thanks. He drove away, turning once to see that the boy was safely in his house. Barry told his mother all about it, but she insisted it must have been a nasty experience and called the police. Since Barry couldn't remember the number of the car and had no idea of the stranger's name, there was little they could do. They never found the man.